Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
To have you with us, we appreciate you tuning in each and every week. It is a special program today because we got a special guest. You say, well, David, you say that all the time, all your programs are special. Yeah, well, they are. We are really fortunate to have some great guests, and each one of them I'm excited about. But let me tell you why I'm excited about today's guest. We've got Robert Stowe England. Robert England, who is a well-known writer and a financial journalist. And he just published two articles in the September issue of the Mortgage Banking Magazine. The cover page article is The Next Generation. And then he also, in the same publication, same issue, he was asked to do a Q&A session with Richard Cordray, the director of the CFPB. So we're real excited to have Robert coming on the broadcast here after the break. Went during the Hot Topics segment here in a little bit, and to go over all of the exciting things that he's learned, and we just got a few new special insights of what's going on, what we can anticipate. Again, we're doing a series of broadcasts throughout between now, actually, and November 6th, Election Day, and really talking about what these two candidates mean to our industry. And so today, we're going to be continuing that discussion with Robert England, who wrote those two articles. If you don't have and you do not get the MBA magazine, that's one of those must-read article magazines and publications in our industry. Janet Hewitt just does an outstanding job of staying on top of and planning out the issues so they're relevant, and the material in there is just spot on. So compliments to Janet and the job she does, and for finding guys like Robert to write for them and doing bringing us the critical information we need. Great articles in all the magazines. It's a must-read magazine always, but September's issue is a must-read of all the must-reads, so I highlight and bullet point that one. So anyway, good to have you with us, being part of the broadcast, September 17th again, if I haven't mentioned that before, and we're on to find out what's going on in the markets. Joe Farr with MBS Quoteline, good to have you with us. What's going on today? Prices are up, you tell me.
Well, they're up a little bit. It's really been a quiet day, and boy, we needed one. But so far they're up about 5/32 on the day, and it opened about there as well. So it's not a lot of movement. This morning, the only economic event that came out was the Empire State Index, which was came out at a disappointing -10 when -3 was expected. And you know, ordinarily, you would expect the market to react to that in that it would be an indication of a weak economy and stocks would sell off and mortgages would improve. But in the new world of the Fed and Europe and all that, the market just seems to be, sloughing that off.
Amazing. That is amazing, especially with being the worst ever. So let's go talk about last week. Get in and give us a little bit of an idea.
Well, the market got what they wanted, didn't they? The Fed came through in a big way. New quantitative easing was announced, as I'm sure we all have heard by now, and it was not a surprise that it was announced, but it was a surprise the degree to which it's focused on the mortgage side of things, and then the degree to which they have committed to stay with it for a long period of time. So on the news, MBS prices improved over a point. On the news, the stock market improved a couple hundred points on the Dow, and everyone was happy.
Everybody was happy, yes.
The Fed is going to purchase $40 billion a month of new MBS, and they're going to also be replacing their MBS that pays off. So the sum of what they would buy is going to represent about $60-65 billion a month, which at recent activity is going to be about a little over half of all the MBS that's put together and sold is going to be purchased by the Fed.
Man, but as we found out last week, Joe, and from our guest David Stephen and Austin Tillman, is the markets are doing pretty well. The secondary markets, MBS markets, are doing pretty well without that program.
they sure liked getting the new one. And you know, a lot of that, Dave, was
yeah, more. If we got plenty of money, more is better, right? Drive
yeah.
The price down.
You know, there was anticipation of that. So not all the reaction, even though it was over a 1% improvement in price after the announcement, there had been an improvement of another 1% leading up to that. So, yeah, the market started to react to it. They expected new quantitative easing, and they got it. But what they got was greater than what they had anticipated. So more followed. And so the question now is, as the Fed begins to implement, will that impact the mortgage market going forward to the point that they will be buying a big percentage of new MBS is issued? You know, the factors of supply and demand could cause mortgage prices to improve on days, but you know, other days it may just hold in there. So most of the benefit of quantitative easing is in the price right now, I believe.
Yep, it's in the price right there. I was on CNBC with Maria Bartiromo on Friday. You got to watch that interview.
I saw you.
Yeah, it's fine. And we were talking about this, and it's just a general consensus. If you look at everything, it, you know, it's just a whole lot to do about nothing. But a general sense that, you know, the Feds have now done about all they can do to stimulate this economy. So,
well, they have. I mean, there's not more pickup from another Fed announcement. It's you know, they're all in here, as people have reported. They've said it's open ended what they're going to do, so they can't add to that, and they've said they're going to do what has to be done, so they can't add to that.
Yep.
So it's all in right now. Interesting, because of their focus on mortgages, we saw the mortgage market, MBS prices improve considerably, but the longer-term treasuries did not. In fact, the 30-year treasury went negative for the on the day of the announcement. So those of you watching the 10-year and the treasury markets is just one example of a disconnect between how mortgage-backed security prices and treasury prices can move opposite so often, but different from each other.
Yeah, I think that was a bit of driven by the fact that the Feds came in and says we're buying mortgage backs, we're not buying anything else. So
right.
Just that was the biggest factor in that. So
no question.
So
no
what?
Question.
Anything else notable about last week that we need to cover? There were several other things.
Certainly, with all this quantitative easing, inflation is a concern, will become a concern. It's not right now, though. Even though both PPI and CPI showed higher than expected or higher inflationary tendencies, it's all predicated on the cost of gasoline, and it's rolling through there. So if you do it without food and energy, inflation is very well under control. On Friday, largely due to having such a big rally on Thursday following the Fed meeting, mm-hmm. the market gave some back. A very good consumer sentiment number came out on Friday, which kind of was the impetus for the market to reverse some of the gains from the day before.
That's interesting. And then the German courts had some action going on there, didn't they?
You know, we talked about that leading up to the week, and Germany was going to, the German courts were going to either say it was constitutional or it was not constitutional for Germany's involvement in what the ECB was planning to do in buying bonds. And it was largely expected that they would approve it. Then the German courts, in fact, did, and it became a non-event pretty much.
I must have I must have missed that at the beginning. Let's talk about this week. You say in here in your notes it may seem like a vacation.
Well, we've got the big things behind us. You know, we've got the Fed decisions now behind us. We've got the ECB that's put out their bond buying program, and the market seems to like that for now. I don't know how long that will last, as we're starting to see things deteriorate somewhat in Portugal and you know, Greece and Spain are still in the throes of issues. So nothing really fundamental has changed over there, but the market seemed to like what the European Central Bank did in putting together the bond buying program. Housing data comes out this week.
That's right.
Which may have some influence on the market, not a lot. Philly Fed will come out on Thursday with the weakness in this morning's report on the, with the Empire Empire State Index not having much of an impact on the market. I can't imagine the Philly Fed will either. So really should be a much more quiet week than what we went through last week and what we've seen in a number of weeks leading up to now.
Well, it's going to be interesting. It's interesting to see. I've got a chart I'm looking at that shows mortgage spreads between the AOT prices and best efforts. Again, the spreads have increased to some of the highest they've been in for a few months here. So interesting to see what's going on, Joe. And again, for those of you that do not have the MBS quote line service, boy, I tell you, you're missing out on all some great information. And how do the markets move when they start moving up? They move quickly, and you cannot get caught flat-footed. Joe, appreciate you bringing
Thank
this
you.
To us each and every week. And, folks, we'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back with us. By the way, we got some new internet service in here, and so hopefully you're hearing us well. Someone texted me and said, Dave, are you sipping coffee? I think I heard you a little bit ago. I go, yes, I guess the phone lines are just a little bit clearer, if that's the case, if you heard me sipping on my coffee. Anyway, it's good to have you back. By the way, on the housing data, I will be on Fox Business on Wednesday of this week at, I believe, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Central Time. I'll put a post out on that. On my Facebook page as well as on LinkedIn and all the social media out there, so we'll let you know what the exact time is. But I'll be on Fox Business talking about the existing home sale numbers as they come out. Alice Alvey, I tell you, you should see the pages and pages of notes going on with her today. She's provided us today lots of good information. Alice, so good to have you back on the broadcast. We miss you when you're gone, but we know how busy you are, so appreciate you taking a little time out of your busy day to join us and giving us an update. What you got for us on the legislative update today, Alice?
Well, you know, it's kind of one of those things, where do I start, right? We think Congress was quiet over summer, but we still have a lot of bills out there that we're trying to manage. But I want to start first with, we will be watching what's going on with Fannie and Freddie. They did send out some important notices last week on September 11th, new representation and warranty framework. I just think this is an important part of kind of the FIFA working the two agencies together and taking this next step. Everybody's got to take a deep look at what the changes are for quality control because they're changing their audit format. So in one sense, you're getting a little bit of a relief from these, at least the way they phrase it with, you know, you're going to have, they are just going to be looking at 3 years if the loan was performing and you met all the guidelines and you didn't have fraud. You know, so it's trying to be framed that we're getting some, you know, better rep and warranty positions. But at the same time, it's also telling you, you better have good QC put in place because their audit percentages on performing loans are going to go up for the lenders who don't have good performance. So we really do want people to make sure they recognize that. So it's a mixed message in that, and I think we need to watch it, see how lenders react to it in the coming weeks as they try to get more information on it. So that was one big thing that came out this week. Also, we do have that House Bill 4264. We've talked about this bill for you over the last many months this year, but it did pass the House on September 11th also, and this is moving closer to allow FHA to increase its premiums, and most importantly, that annual premium. So, you know, just when we think Congress isn't going to pay attention to the fund because of the election, this did get passed, so we're going to be watching to see if anything happens before the end of the year. What it did was allow FHA to increase that annual MIP up to 2.05%. Most of the loans we've got going on today are sitting around that 1.25 annual percentage rate. So on a $100,000 loan, that's about $104 a month. If we give FHA all this room, we don't know where they would go with it. You know, they might move up to 1.5, 1.75. We don't have that kind of information, but it's giving them the leeway to go as high as the 2.05, which would be $170 a month instead of $104. So that's a big increase, and we're going to watch this for you and see what FHA plans to do with it. We do expect this to keep moving because certainly the fund needs a little bit of a boost, right? And we want to keep FHA running strong. Then we have a couple of bills we're watching. So we have Senate Bill 3522, which actually came out September 11th also, to try and expand the HARP program. Woohoo! HARP 3.0,
woo-hoo!
Right? Is that what we need?
We've got we might as well have 3.0 on that.
Right.
We have 3.0 on HARP, I mean QE, so...
Yeah, we have QE3. We need HARP 3.0 to go with it, right? So we'll see what happens. It was placed on the Senate legislative calendar, and, you know, it would essentially be a no LTV HARP is kind of what I'm reading out of it now, and we'll see what we can get. Another bill out there proposing to allow 50-year terms on loans, and then a couple of amendments to the SAFE, or one amendment to the SAFE Act, trying to make it that if you are a company allowed to perform your own training at your firm, that you would not be allowed to do that. Now, that's a little bit of an older bill. It's been out there for a little over a month, but we'll watch that. And then last but not least, Senate Bill 3470 to extend the PMI insurance tax deduction. So we're hoping that one gets some legs again to get that extended.
Yeah, that would be good.
So I want to give everybody, you asked me to make sure we give everybody a CFPB update. You know you can get your own if you sign up for their newsletter. You know, if you want to hear what they're sending out, go ahead and they had a story out this last week that said, you know, meet Greg from Michigan. Well, being from Michigan, I'm going, what? What is going on? Why are they picking on us again? Just ignore us for a little while. All right. So the story goes on about Greg, 39-year-old insurance adjuster, added his name to his 71-year-old mother's checking account. 6 months passed without Greg getting any statements. He didn't know she bounced a check, and there were collection agency fees for $469. He tried to get cooperation from the bank, and they didn't cooperate. So he filed a complaint with the CFPB. So for everybody out there who thinks, you know, aren't they just going to pay attention to the big guys, right, because they have that $10 billion threshold for who they're supposed to pay attention to on the bank side, this is, you know, going after a $469 bill for a guy who didn't monitor his checking account? How many people are over there? That's what I want to know.
My gosh.
And then the story, you know, kind of like, oh, and this 71-year-old mother. I mean, stop that, right? I just think that's a little over the top to be playing with the age cards there, you know. So forgive me for getting a little bit on a pedestal there. You know, we understand the CFPB is looking out for consumers, and certainly we're for that part of it. But it's just a little heads up, because I've had a lot of community bank and credit union customers say, well, they're not going to pay attention to us. And I read a story like that and go, guess what? They're paying attention to everybody.
Cannot assume that. No. Bad.
Right. And then last but not least, just a heads up on all the proposed rules that are out there for comment. The Mortgage Bankers Association did issue their response to these. It's long but very helpful. So you do need to go take a look at that. A lot of folks say, okay, Alice, how do I respond? You know, there's lots of rules out there. We have several of them. Their comment period is open until November 6th. And probably the most important one is the combined disclosure on RESPA and TILA. And then we also have the potential change in the Section 32, HOPA. And actually, if you want to read what CFPB has to say about that, Richard Stowe England's article in the MBA magazine, or his interview with Richard Cordray, touches on some of that. So it was very helpful for me to read that Q&A. I'm not so sure he doesn't come out and say, I'm interested in Richard's opinion anyway. Does Richard Cordray come out and really seem to say, well, we're going to do these anyway. We're taking all your feedback, but we're going to do these anyway.
Your feedback, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I'm interested to get Richard's opinion on how that, in the interview, did he really get a sense that they're going to listen to a lot of what we have our concerns?
Me too.
So loan originator compensation, that one is open until October 16th. And the high-risk appraisal guidelines, those are open until October 14th. So make sure you take a good look at the MBA's response, and that will help you respond to this one. Also, don't hesitate to send an email to me if you have any questions about them, alvey@mortgage-u.com. We're happy to help.
Yes, one more time. Give that out one more time.
alvey@mortgage-u.com.
Folks, Alice is just such a great resource. We appreciate you being on the broadcast each and every week. But if you have if your trade association, your local association is looking for someone to come and speak, I mean, I don't know if you can get on her dance card. She is so booked up, and for obvious reasons on the knowledge that she has. But if you ever could get her out there to speak at one of your events, I'll tell you, it's just outstanding material. I've listened to her speak many, many times, have the privilege of speaking with her occasionally. What a joy and delight. Alice, thank you so much for bringing us this report. Say hi to everyone.
You're welcome.
And look forward to having Robert England on here just shortly and talking about all that. But Tony Garitano will be up right after the break. We'll be right back in just a brief moment.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back with us. I'm scanning up and down the numbers of everyone dialed in just with that phone today. I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule. We do this as a public service to the industry, for the industry, and it's a real honor when you take time out of your busy day to dial in with a cell phone or to dial in through the web and do that. If you want to stay up on the broadcast, you can go to www.lickinonlending.com, see what broadcasts we've got coming up and who the guests are and all of that kind of good stuff. So we try to keep you up and going on. Also, LinkedIn, there's a website. Facebook has a website. I think I've touched every social media site out there, so you can find it. Do a Google search. We're out there, and we appreciate you tuning in and, very important to this, tell others about the broadcast. So let's get on with Tony Garitano, founder of Progress in Lending Association. Good to have Tony on the phone here with us. And we've got a couple questions for you, Tony. As you know, we're talking about the political commentary. We're getting feedback on everybody and how this election, as Robert England, you're going to hear shortly, talks about how pivotal this is. So how do you see politics and mortgage technology, any changes as a result of politics in the world of mortgage technology, Tony?
I think politics has shaped mortgage technology, especially over the past 2 or 3 years. And I think some of that has been positive and some of it has been negative. I mean, personally, I like the FHFA edition of UMDP that mandated a more data-driven process and said you have to embrace MISMO data standards. I think that that's what the industry needs in order to move to a fully electronic process. You know, they need that push and they need that direction. So I think that was a big positive. I think some of the things that are being done by the CFPB, on the other hand, are not quite so positive.
Yeah, I think one of the things, and I think it was Joe that brought this question up in one of the other segments we were talking about, one of the previous broadcasts, is isn't all of the politics, which is causing everyone to have to go back and reprogram things and do so much, modifying of programs to be compliant, isn't that really affecting innovation? So my next question is, how is politics shaping technology, and at least thus far?
I think that to Joe's point, I mean, it's forcing technology vendors and lenders alike to take a second look at technology, and they are automating more processes, which is a good thing. But I think that everything has to be done in the guise of compliance, which I think probably causes some lenders to think short-term versus long-term, in that
right.
I have this new law, I've got to deal with it, so let's do that right now. But I'm not really thinking too much about how to improve my overall lending process, but I realize in order to comply with this new law, I need technology to help me out.
Well, if you were to get to a president, if you could get one of the candidates here and the next president, what would you say to them as it relates to mortgage technology? What would be your one piece of advice? Now, we know some of the campaigns are actually listening to this broadcast to kind of gauge what's going on within the mortgage industry because we kind of be a voice down for it. What would you say to them?
Well, I mean, my big, area whereby I think the current president has failed, quite frankly, is we don't really know where he stands on many of the issues, and
yeah.
he has not been, a true leader, and some of his positions lack a lot of clarity. And I would hope that if he is reelected, that he comes to market with more concrete plans like those that the FHFA detailed, that talk more about automation, that talk more about open data standards, and that really engage with the mortgage market in a way that, quite frankly, his administration has not. Personally, I think the Republican candidate will be more business-friendly and in his policies will engage more with mortgage bankers to come up with something that is more friendly to our industry. But whatever happens, I hope that the president, whoever he is, is more clear and upfront and more technology focused than the current president.
Well, at least aware of it. I kind of doubt we're going to get the president to comment on mortgage technology. Knowing that some of his staff might be listening, we are all for suggesting things they should focus on. Tony Garitano, thank you so much. You've got an event coming up just before the MBA national event. Give us a quick word about that, the Progress in Lending. It's the Engage event.
Yes, we started the Engage event last year, as you know, Dave. We will be continuing with the series this year. It'll be October 21st in Chicago, Illinois. It'll be the kickoff for the MBA annual, so we hope
yes.
that you'll take the time to come in and see what we have to say. The entire event is going to be about how we as an industry can transform the mortgage process for the better. It's from 2 to 4, so if you're in
on
Chicago,
Sunday, yeah.
Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, admittance is free or admission is free. There's no charge.
That's a good price point.
Yeah,
that's a good
that's
price.
The best,
that's a
right?
good price point. Free, yeah.
So
Allison and I will both come in. Yeah, Allison and I will both be there. We're silver sponsors. We appreciate you letting us be a part of it, and just an honor to be there. And we'll be talking about leadership at that event. Tony, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day to be a part of the broadcast. And I hope you look forward to seeing you shortly in Chicago. But we'll have you on next week as well. Thank you so much for being a part of the broadcast.
Thank you, Dave.
Folks, we'll be right back after this brief word.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Good to have you back with us. By the way, someone asked, where's Andy Schell? Isn't Andy Schell normally there, the prophet doctor? And well, he is up in an airplane right now, traveling up to Chicago for some meetings. We wish he and our associates that are traveling with him well. Have a good time up there, Andy. But we appreciate him bringing us the broadcast or being a part of the broadcast each and every week. But Tony is not with us. Andy, the prophet doctor, is not with us. Tony was just with us. Multitasking here. Hey, one thing that I would make sure that you are aware of and if possible could register for, taking the time to register for, would be the Campus MBA webinar this Thursday. Andy Schell, backed by popular demand, is doing another accounting series through the Campus MBA folks, and they do great webinars. And this Thursday, Andy is doing the second of three sessions. Go to the Campus MBA website and look for the accounting webinar. Very, very important, especially with all that's going on with CFPB, the licensing, the call report, financial reporting. It's more critical that you get it right now than ever before. You've heard us talk about that a lot on the broadcast. Our next guest, Robert Stowe England. I am so excited about this. I read his article in the September issue of the Mortgage Banking Magazine as soon as it came out. Of course, we're doing a series between now and November 6th on the topic of the politics and the impact that these two candidates will be having on this election. And I read this article and I go, this is really well done. I mean, he really does a comprehensive job of this. And I go, who is this guy? So I noticed an email. So I shot at the bottom of the article, shot off an email. He responded right back. And I go, is there any way, Robert, we could talk you into coming on the radio? I would like to talk about this article. I'd like to share it with our listeners. We talked earlier at the opening of the broadcast how important the MBA magazine, how really well written it is. I got more insights into it in talking to Robert, just how intuitive Janet Hewitt is, the editor of the magazine, to bring the most critical articles at the right time to press and in front of your eyes. So if you don't subscribe to the magazine, number one, you should. Number two, you must get a copy of this month's article, September, because there's two articles in it. The two articles, again, are talking about the election, a pivotal election, and then also the Q&A article with Richard Cordray, the director of CFPB. Robert England, good to have you with us and be on the broadcast. I want to make sure I have your mic turned on, that you're hearing me fine.
Yes, I'm hearing you fine, and it's good to be here.
Oh, it's a real honor. Robert's background is he's an author and a financial journalist. He is specialized in writing about retirement income issues, something near and dear to my heart as I turned 62 this year, financial situations, and financial markets. And this is an interesting, the aging population, the impact of that. From 1999 to 2003, he served as the director of research for the Global Aging Initiative at the Center of Strategic and International Studies there in Washington, D.C. He's written the author of the book, The Black Box Casino, How Wall Street's Risky Shadow Banking System Basically Crashed the Global Finance. And it's a great article. Also, it's real, what I like about when you open the cover of the book. I just got a copy of it. It just arrived. He was kind enough to send me a copy. It arrived just before the broadcast. And it is dedicated to American people who wondered what went wrong. I loved who you dedicated it to, Robert. Also, he's written a book on aging China, the implications of impact of the aging China on economic prospects for that country and globally. Published three other books. I could go on and on. He's a graduate of Duke University, but most importantly, he is a regular writer for the Mortgage Banking Magazine, and I'm thrilled that Janet has sought you out to do that because, Robert, you wrote a really excellent article this last week in the September issue. Let's get into that. When interviewing people for sources for your story that was published, what did they say about why candidates are ignoring housing and mortgage issues? A real big question in my mind is I'm going, why aren't you guys going there? What did you find out?
Well, first of all, when I called the two campaigns when I was working on the story, neither campaign would provide anyone to be interviewed. And then
really?
I even called some of their advisors, who they listed as advisors, and I would call them, and they would not be interviewed either because the campaign hadn't authorized it. So the observers I talked to said that they thought that the reasons that they were more or less ignoring this issue is that there are no simple solutions that you can point to resolve the problem. There are no silver bullets, as one of them pointed out. And the second reason is that once you start being specific, even if you have a general idea of what you want to do, it opens you up to a line of attack. And so the more general you are, or you are less presumably likely to be attacked.
I can understand that. You point out in the article, again, we were talking about the mortgage banking issue, September issue, and the article, the name of the article is The Next Administration. And you start out by saying there's probably never been a time where we've had two more striking, contrasting candidates. And it's, and you say in the article, one of the opening sentences, it's the battle for core philosophies. And it's almost gotten to the point of ideologies in there. We know a lot about the Obama approach to solutions for a housing market, but what can we surmise about Romney's approach, given the fact that they're not saying much?
No, as I said, they refuse to talk about it, and they've said very little about it. And very early in the campaign, when Romney opened his campaign office in Nevada, he answered a question about this and said that he would let the housing market recover on its own, and he was vilified for that. By the DNC, and he sort of backed off that issue.
Interesting. I mean, it goes to the point. What you were saying is, you know, anything you say on this, you can almost take a shot at almost any direction you're going to go, because no one really has. There is not a clear solution. At least the perception there isn't a clear solution here.
Well, in this case, the Democratic National Committee dedicated a website titled Mitt Romney's Housing Plan. At MittRomney'sHousingPlan.com, and when you go there, of course, you think you're going to see Mitt Romney's housing plan, and it says that it quotes a statement from Romney, and then says that Romney is hopelessly out of touch when it comes to housing policy.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Well, if Obama is reelected, do people in the mortgage industry think he will continue to pursue our principal reductions?
I think he will, and I meant to throw in that other answer that I think Romney will continue hamp and harp, which is something that hasn't gotten out there.
So you do think he will continue those two programs?
Yes, he actually admitted that. And once again, he was in Nevada, which is interesting, but he was being interviewed by a Nevada television station, broadcast TV station last week, and on Thursday, in fact, and they asked him about that, and he said he would continue those programs and he would market them better. And streamline the bureaucracy, but he didn't
is
provide.
Is he going to do more to really, you know, achieve more results in this area, you think? I mean, Romney will versus what Obama, or can we expect Obama kind of do more, just, you know, what
well,
has
it's possible that
what
program
been,
could be, I mean, this is just surmise,
yeah,
could be adjusted as, you know, the industry got involved with the original programs and helped them tweak them, and they did better. Now that, you know, Romney is committed to continuing these programs, he might be open to more suggestions. It's just a surmise on my part, but make them more.
Well,
effective.
You did interview a lot of people on that, Robert. So I mean, I really do. Your surmising is probably a very, very educated surmising.
So getting back to the question you just asked about principal reductions, I think that they do want to do principal reductions, and I don't think they've given up on that. But that's going to be very difficult to do. First of all, you know, Ed DeMarco has, you know, sort of said no, and absolute no, I guess you would say. And he is an acting director. In order to get their way, they would have to replace him, and the replacement would presumably have to be confirmed by the Senate, and I don't think the Senate would necessarily go for principal reduction. So I think he might go for it. I mean, he might try to do it. I'm not sure he would be successful.
I don't, especially with it being election year, that would just look too suspicious. I think he's going to leave it alone. Joe, I want you to bring you in on the dialogue. You pointed out the DNC platform, one of the planks of the platform. I think it'd be really good to bring that up for those listeners that were not on the broadcast last week. If you could bring that up and then give you the mic. I know you got some questions.
Well, this is how the DNC platform begins. I'm quoting here, for more than a decade, irresponsible lenders tricked buyers into signing subprime loans. So, you know, that kind of sets the page. And I wanted to ask Richard if it's kind of my expectation that the Obama administration is going to utilize Ginnie, Fannie, Freddie, or FHA, VA, Fannie and Freddie to promote a social agenda more so probably than what Romney would do. And so to characterize the future under the two administrations, I would say that under Obama we have more loans but more regulation, and under Romney we might have fewer loans because he might not promote the HARP 3 like Alice mentioned earlier. He might continue some, but is he going to really promote it? But we'd have fewer regulations. Is that reasonable?
Well, I'm not sure I would draw a straight line from the first part of your point to the second. Because more regulations, fewer regulations would be more positive to the extension of credit and might lead to more loans. So, I mean, you have the private sector on one hand and you have the government on the other. So which would deliver more loans, having a big program, a HAMP and HARP program that was extended, or reducing some of the regulatory burden that would lead more lenders to go out there and make loans?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have the private sector almost dead. I think 91% of all the loans were government backed loans or government loans of one type or another. So you might have just a trade-off there.
And when you know, it brings us to the discussion about, you know, private sector and public sector and the future of Fannie and Freddie. And how do you see their future differ in a Romney versus an Obama administration?
Well, the interesting thing is how the dynamic in Washington has changed about Fannie and Freddie. As you may or may not recall, when the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission looked into what caused the crisis, they didn't pay much attention to Fannie and Freddie. I mean, they didn't ignore them, but they were kind of low on the totem pole of issues. And so it was kind of a surprise in February of 2011 that the Treasury Department came out with a proposal that suggested that the private sector should be play the dominant role in the future, and that Fannie and Freddie be wound down and eliminated. And so to the extent that idea has actually been embraced by the Obama administration, it's not all that different from what a Romney administration would do. And, the actual structure of what would replace it and whether or not there would be a government guarantee or backing of securities or, you know, how it would be structured would vary, I think, between the two, with more government involvement under Obama than Romney. But here is one case where it seems like, you know, the majority of the across the spectrum in Washington has moved in one direction, but certainly not everyone. And it wouldn't necessarily turn out that way. I mean, you could imagine also an Obama administration where they decided not to do that.
Yeah. Well, which of the two do you think would give it a higher priority?
Great question.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, neither one of them has given it much priority yet. And from, you know, their campaigns, you can see they've had different priorities in their campaigns. So I don't think either one of them is going to put it in the top five issues, you know, of priority of what they would like to do. One source I talked to said it was ironic that maybe even an Obama administration might move quicker because they've already done so much groundwork and preparation for a proposal, and they're probably even working on a proposal right now. And the Romney administration is much more focused on tax reform and creating jobs, and would be, based on their campaign, and entitlement reform. And so this would be down the list. And so it may end up being Congress that takes the lead, because Congress there's been a great deal of interest.
Well, and rightfully so, it'd be down the list. I think the other things have a higher need.
Well, we certainly have there's so many needs across the country, especially when you look at what's going on globally. And there's no question. As for leadership, any sense of which of the two candidates is going to provide the necessary leadership as we look forward, at least on the housing and mortgage industries?
I think either one of them, if they decide to take it up, even though it was a lower priority, they would be inclined to, you know, weigh in on it and try to get Congress to do things their way. But I think the question is the priority and their list of things to do and when they would get around to it. So,
well,
I think they would both give it leadership. They would have to give it a lot of energy, and they may not give it sufficient energy to.
And I think, as you point out in your article, I've got it right here, I'm looking at it, is, you know, it really comes down to the philosophies and ideologies of the two candidates. So, an excellent article. Folks, again, we have as our special guest Robert Stowe England, who wrote two articles in the September issue of the Mortgage Banking Magazine. Robert, is the one article that we're speaking specifically about is the next administration trying to get insights to which of the two candidates is going to provide what kind of policy and leadership moving forward. Great interview, folks. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back with us. Our special guest is Robert Stowe England, who is the author of two great articles in the September issue of the Mortgage Banking Magazine. Let's get back into the interview with Robert. Alice, you have got a number of questions here. I know that you would love to get to them. And thank you both, Alice and Joe, for taking time out of your busy days to read this article at the last minute as we shift our schedule of our guests around just to accommodate this, I think, really important article. Alice?
Yeah, hi, Dave, and welcome to the program, Robert. I think,
thank you.
You know, we've focused a little bit here, our questions, on the, you know, Obama or Romney side. What about the makeup of Congress? You know,
great,
that's
question.
Just as big of an issue here in trying to establish what, you know, are we going to continue in this world of uncertainty as we go forward with regulations? So what are the prospects for either administration to advance their agenda based on what happens in Congress?
Well, that is the key, isn't it? Because no matter what the administration may want to do, most of these things that need to be changed would require action by Congress. And so to the extent you know, the makeup of Congress changes or remains the same, it would influence their ability to get something done. And I talked to quite a few people about what sort of Congress we might have. And, you know, the consensus, I hate to use that word, but of the common refrain was that the Republicans are likely to maintain the House. However, they would have a smaller margin of victory. They would have fewer, smaller majority.
Mm-hmm.
But you couldn't rule out the Democrats regaining control with a very slim majority. And if they did, I think it was is agreed that Maxine Waters would likely become chairman of the House Financial Services Committee. So think about that for a minute.
Oh, that just, yeah, sorry, jumping in there. I've just got a yikes.
And, sorry.
Well, that would mean we would get a lot of attention. There would be, how do I say this?
How do we say this politically correct? That's so funny.
And if the GOP retains power, as we expect, and then there would, we wouldn't have Spencer Baucus because he's indicated he doesn't want to have that job again. He wants to move on. And there are three contenders for that are commonly mentioned. One would be Scott Garrett of New Jersey. The other is Jeb Hinserling of Texas, and Ed Royce of California is the third. And if the GOP takes the Senate, which is a possibility, I mean, it's certainly not likely, but it's possible, then Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama would take charge of the Senate Banking Committee. And, you know, that would, he would be more probably more open to a lot of market-friendly reforms. And then if you had a complete GOP Congress, you know, that would indicate one direction, obviously, than having a divided Congress. I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead.
I think one thing they want to that would come up if Romney were president would be the repeal of the Dodd-Frank Act. And I think that's something he would like to do. And it would seem, you know, after talking to a number of people, that that would be difficult to do because it could be filibustered in the Senate, even if the GOP had control of the Senate. But there would probably be considerable support for a technical corrections bill to Dodd-Frank. So I think we can more safely predict that that would happen, no matter what the makeup of Congress, in fact, and that a number of important changes could be made through that technical corrections bill.
Well, that would be important. I don't know how you repeal that whole thing, you know, since some parts are already in place. But, yeah, that would be interesting to watch. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that. Well, what about special interest groups? You know, what role will they play in shaping, you know, any effort by either candidate to try and reform the, or restructure the GSAs and restart that private market?
Well, anything going through Congress in terms of legislation faces a lot of barriers, and a lot of people want to influence how it comes out. And while, you know, on a certain level you have these two parties and two ideologies that would want a particular outcome, that is going to be shaped quite a bit by the various industry groups and special interests that will be up there trying to shape the legislation themselves to how they would like to see it done. And given that the margins of the majority, whoever has it in the House or Senate, will be smaller than probably they are now, I think that enhances the role of these groups. I mean, you have the mortgage bankers, the construction industry, realtors, and then you have the affordable housing advocates. All of them, I think, will be trying to, you know, shape the legislation and will probably be quite influential, I would guess.
Well, at least we have that in some cases, some of the nonprofits or the consumer side are even understanding the negative side to some of this legislation that we've seen come through, or and even parts of the Dodd-Frank that are going to restrict the availability of loans to consumers. So I think in some respects maybe we can manage that by just helping people see the negative impact some of this could have in restricting loans. So we'll hope to get some alliances on that front on our own. Well, what are the odds of the private sector actually coming back in any kind of meaningful way under Dodd-Frank and Basel III? You know, we've got low rates, but, you know, we still have this constant uncertainty that's out there with the regulations and how the enforcement that the CFPB is pushing down on folks.
Well, it would seem that just about everything that's going on with all these regulations and the low interest rates is inhibiting the willingness of banks to lend, and it's also tightening underwriting standards. And some of it is shaping parts of the mortgage industry. For example, the rules governing loan compensation have been, and just the general compliance costs has been very costly for mortgage brokers, and a lot of them have just shut down because they can't afford the compliance costs under Dodd-Frank. And the threat of Basel III, on the other hand, is restrict the ability of the large banks to hold mortgage servicing rights and make it costly if they got too large. And so a lot of them, you know, in the future would restrict expanding their balance sheet with those servicing rights. And so they would that would be a dampener on the market. And the low interest rates make it harder for banks to be more flexible on underwriting because there's no margin for error. And one, I've heard a number of people say over the last year or so that because the rates are so low, banks are even more strict than they would otherwise be about underwriting because they can't make any mistakes or they wipe out whatever they could make on the loan.
Well, and right, they're not going to be able to keep these low rates in portfolio, so everything's still going to Fannie and Freddie.
Even if Fannie and Freddie are phased out, I think the phase out would be very, very long.
Yeah.
Could be 5 or 10 years or more.
Yeah, we'll be talking about it for a long time, I think. What about the affordable lending programs? How would they fare under Obama versus the Romney administration?
Well, you know, the Obama administration has already taken an aggressive stance on what is called disparate impact enforcement. And I think that could probably be, they will definitely continue that in the second administration. And I don't think a Romney administration would do that, but you never know. I mean, sometimes you think that ideologically one would go one way and then they surprise you sometimes, but I doubt they would do that. And that could lead to pressures to lend even to borrowers who are unable to pay. I mean, it would put you in conflict with some of the other regulations.
Right.
But if you are judged to have been discriminatory based on statistical analysis, even though you didn't intend to, and you can't cite a single loan or case of discrimination, then you know you're going to face a penalty. So there may be, you know, I don't know how lenders are going to deal with that, to be honest. But I think that will be more of that. And some people worry that we might be repeating what happened the last time with banks being pressured to make loans that they probably knew would not be repaid.
Right. We would want that the banks could keep their own credit overlays to be able to manage their risks in their markets. Yeah. Well, I'm going to pass it back to you, Dave. I know we've got just a few
minutes. Joe,
let's go to the question about the interview with Richard Cordray. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated about that. Looking, we have so little time left, it just could go on and on about this. You interviewed Richard Cordray, the director of the CFPB, and what are some of the things that you learned that will be impacting availability of credit and shape our mortgage industry? By the way, that is a great Q&A session. What can we learn from that article?
Well, I have to say that Richard Cordray was pretty forthcoming, and I thought fairly frank in that interview, and I was pleased to see that he gave the interview and that he was willing to, you know, tell
me. The fact that he gave you the interview is quite astounding. Normally you get handed down, but it's obviously that he's wanting to communicate to the industry and communicate directly. What was the tone that you received from him? I mean, we can't pick that up necessarily in writing, although you did a great job of communicating what he said. What did you sense the flavor of his commentary?
Well, he seemed to be wanting to reassure people that he was taking into consideration a lot of the concerns that are out there. And, you know, for
example,
asked him about whether or not how this would affect the availability of credit, you know, all of these rules. And obviously we're seeing that it's restricting it. But he said that, I think, here's his quote from him, I think the thinking there is that it's great for us to write a lot of protections for consumers on consumer credit, but if they can't get credit, we haven't accomplished anything, and we really haven't improved life for consumers. I thought that was a great quote.
It's a great quote. We got to leave it there. Let's talk about your book that you've just written and published. I think it was late last year, Black Box Casino. Give us a quick word on that.
Well, I covered the industry for many years, since 1988, and I wanted to get to the bottom of what went wrong and what caused the crisis. And so I did all the work and the interviews and research and put that all together. And it goes way back to the early 90s and goes through all the efforts made to weaken underwriting standards. And then it goes through all of the failures that occurred in 2007 and 2008 failure of Bear Stearns and quite a bit on Lehman Brothers. So.
Well, it's a great book, folks. You can go to our website, lickinonlending.com. Go to today's broadcast. You'll see the links to getting the book. I've just started reading it. It was so good, I got distracted. Imagine that, reading it already. Just almost missed getting the broadcast going here. Great book. Robert, thank you so much for taking time to be a part of the broadcast. Tune in next week. And be also, remember, Campus MBA webinar this Thursday. Andy Schell, Prophet Doctor, will be there. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.